Let's talk about dicks.
That is literally what came into my head straight away.
What would I compare Ryan to? A huggable panda? A little koala?
A red panda. Ginger. Red panda. Come on.
Yeah.
Also a very cute animal.
What would you be, John? Apart from an aubergine.
Thanks, Cindy.
You're welcome. I said apart from an aubergine.
I think your categorisation's gone wrong. Yeah. If Ryan was a panda, are we saying that he breeds less well in captivity? Is that what we're saying?
I think he's just inoffensive.
I was going to say, isn't that how you damaged in the first place? But that sounds so wrong. I don't want that guy out of there.
You think that's how I hurt my finger? That I drained it from flipping the needle.
Repeatedly.
Repeatedly.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to another Digitools in a Cruel World podcast, all part of a wide-ranging digital disruptors brand that we're bringing to you nice and shiny from our website, which hopefully will be launched soon. And as always, I'm joined by the very lovely Ryan. But first of all, we'll go to Indy because she's had a little bit of a mischief and she's not all there at the moment, let's put it that way.
Oh yeah, this just in. I am like, it is pretty painful. I know you take the piss, but it's never at all a great thing when someone falls over and snaps their fingernail off from the root. And it is, yeah, I'm pretty sad about it for anyone that's seen me. I love my nails and it might seem like a complete bimbo thing that you snap your nail, but actually it was like from the root. So I had a lot of people around me saying, oh, those are your fake nails. And I was like, no, that's polish on my real nail, which is now hanging off and bleeding everywhere. So there you go. That's a nice start to our show.
It's not the sort of bandage I was expecting after hearing that you'd had a fingering injury.
That is not what I said. And you were quite empathetic. So don't make yourself seem like an asshole now to everybody listening. John has a very soft side usually.
Yeah, don't talk about that. That's what the blue pills are for.
Exactly. Anyway, thank you for caring.
You call it caring. I call it merely showing a little bit of interest. But it's talking about showing a little bit of interest. Over to you, Ryan. How are you?
I am not bad. I'm cringing from the thought of a nail being ripped off. Luckily, I have no chance of that happening because I bite my nails vigorously from all the stress that you two put me under. But I'm not injured at all. I'm in one piece for once. I haven't got a heavy cold. I should be able to talk through the entire of this podcast without coughing or sneezing, which would be brilliant. And Toonie or Paul or John, whatever we're calling you at the moment, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. I in the office in Manchester today. We've had afternoon tea provided by the partners because it's year end and I think we've had a very successful year again. And I'm also looking forward to the Accounting Excellence Awards Tuesday night. So this should be good fun. Train strikes aside.
Such a successful year that you can afford afternoon tea. That must have been a massively successful year.
That's until all the credit notes start rolling in next week.
Mainly on John's accounts. I'm joking.
Yeah, probably right.
All right, let's crack on.
Can no one else hear a printer
are you,
going
are
in the
you
background?
Like peddling under the desk.
Yeah, has someone got a printer going or something?
It's the rain.
Oh, the rain.
Oh, is that the rain? Oh.
Is that what it is?
To me, it sounds like an old school printer. The ones that goes across as the holes in the side with the paper that comes up. That's what it sounded like to me.
I miss those things.
If we maintain a level of misogynism on the podcast, which is only completely healthy for us both, Ryan, I thought Indy was at one of those old style pedal weaving machines that you get.
What I love is you're that old, John, that your first thought is something from the 1930s. Oh yes, back in my day, the sound was when women used to pedal under the table.
If we're really lucky, by the time we've finished, Indy will have made like one whole sock or a new bandage for a finger. Either or.
I think that's brilliant.
I would have thought
she'd
make you a gag. That's where I'd go.
After the sex shop stories and the Love Honey review stories, who knows what we're all going to be getting for our next Christmas or birthday present.
We didn't have a sex shop story. Did we talk about a sex shop story?
We did.
Did we?
It was the reviews. I'm pretty sure I listened to that one.
I don't think, did we talk about Indy's visit to a sex shop?
Oh, we didn't talk about that. Oh, someone's just gone very smiley. So when did this happen?
That's up. Okay, let's crack on. Now I better get back to my weaving, so can we hurry up? Can we just debrief for one moment about Account Acts, which was our digital disruptors event? I would like to highlight that you wouldn't have known it, so much so that the guy organising the darts had said, thank God I was there, because he didn't even speak to Paul. He thought John's name was Paul. That's how much he was like, I didn't even know where Paul was. And I was like, neither do I, but John's over there.
Oh, we are introducing you as Paul from now on, Tootie.
Like the alien.
The alien Paul, just like that.
But congratulations, John. I thought it was a very well-run event. Actually, I thought it was really good.
Thank you. Well, with your assistance, Indy, I think that's fair to say.
It's always me in the engine room. I'm fine with it. I just don't disclose it to anyone.
It comes the face.
Can I say that my absolute personal best and highlight was playing on two boards, because we were waiting for people to show up for the game because there was a lot of train delays. And so I registered myself as an extra on one of the boards to allow other people to come in. And I ended up winning the first game on both boards.
Wow. Hustle. Well done.
I'm a fool.
So did you have to play yourself in the final?
No, there were a lot of games. I'm an absolute fluke, Ryan. I won both of the first games, but I knew that as soon as the pressure's off, I don't care. The dart barely made the board after that.
There were some good games, wasn't there, actually? Because it wasn't just normal darts. We had tap out, as it were, with the right numbers.
Tapping out with the right numbers is normal darts.
But it was quite a lot of variety. It was quite entertaining.
It was very fun. And in the end, who was the winner?
Will Rush from Pixie.
That's right. Yeah. In the final, I remember seeing Tom Herbert, Will Rush, and Sam from Swoop. Jinx, Padlock. Now you can't speak the whole of the rest of the podcast. Anyway, it was a really great event, actually. I think we had a super turnout considering the delays. And so well done, John, for our digital disruptors. Thanks, Paul, for all your assistance and help. Thanks, Paul. The next one.
I mean, that works much better with your southern accent. Thanks, Paul.
Why do we all sound cockney to you? So now all you need to do, Paul, is get on to organising about 20 events for the first 3 months of next year, where there's like 1,000 shows going on.
We do have the events diary. So we've got the events diary that's on out there on Google that people can tap into if they want it. We'll share a link to that. And I do have some ideas for events that we can run around some of the shows. So it's all good.
Watch this space.
We just need to get them planned in.
We will be a little bit cleverer about our branding on the next one, so that at least...
Yeah, we'll make it the indie show.
No, thank you. And now we'll hear from one of our sponsors, Employment Hero. Enjoy.
Touched on data security in one of the previous chats that we had with you, Damon. Data security is absolutely critical for payroll. And what people are interested in understanding is, how do you manage that in Employment Hero, and what sets you apart from other players in the market?
Yeah. Thanks, John. You're 100% right. This is probably one of, if not the most important questions we get asked. And obviously, we're compliant with all our obligations under GDPR, as any business should be. It's so critical. There is no more important data for us to manage and protect on behalf of our clients. So we take it really seriously. We talked in the earlier episode about desktop software and what a lot of people use. There's still so many employee records kept in filing cabinets, believe it or not, let alone on a desktop server, let alone in multiple systems. And we've talked about having different systems, pass information from one system to the next. And as soon as you have that export import, that carries disproportionate risk. That's why GDPR are so tight around how you transfer data between servers and between countries and all that sort of stuff. Everything we do, we need to make sure that we do that as securely and as compliant as possible. But because it can go wrong, like as an employee, and I'm not going to say who was my employer, but it wasn't one of my more recent employers, I would receive my payslip information on unencrypted email. And there's countless examples that we see going into customers where there's just all sorts of spreadsheets, salary information and payroll information getting thrown around the place. And so I think it's an obligation for everyone to think about, what system am I using to do this? Can I contain as much of the data in that one system? Do they have the right permissions for different employers and staff members to access things, and choosing that system and making sure that you do everything possible inside the platform?
You've got to strike that tricky balance with providing employees access to the platform, which doesn't put them off and prevent them from using it effectively. You've obviously got to get the payroll people, team, bureau, whoever it is that's doing it,
give them access to it and, like you say, have the right permissions and the right access levels and things. Is that a tough thing to build for you guys into the product? And how do you also discourage people from then taking payroll information outside of that system?
Yeah, so firstly, there is two-factor authentication. Our old friend, 2FA, and I've seen that used as a blunt instrument as well, your two-factor authentication to every time you want to access like the system, whether it's our Swag app or whether it's actually not for Employment Hero. So it can be for companies, but actually two-factor authentication used contextually, depending on what part of the product you're going in, it can be created in a way that creates a more frictionless experience, because two-factor authentication is friction, and friction is not something that anybody likes inside a product experience. That's probably the biggest challenge, I think, for us as a software provider, is trying to strike that balance between friction and security. But we will always go on the side of security, and we will always test and ensure that, like, ultimately the person that is accessing that information is the person who they say they are.
The thing I like, so I'm currently exploring using Employment Hero at Scrumbland for our payroll. And the one thing I did love is the granularity in the user rights. And one thing that we've explored from this is that so many times where a different department needs to see in payroll data, and you have to contact the payroll team, have to export the information, send it across to you, probably via email, if it's urgent especially, which once again, you've got some data security risk there. The beauty with Employment Hero is you can just add those users as report only, like, viewing to the clients they need to see. So that if they ever need to see this information, they just log in. You don't charge from a user perspective. It's all charged from clients and employees. So the beauty from my perspective is that actually you can open the platform up to more people in a secure way.
That's the sort of beauty of having these systems built once. So when we do have more complicated needs from a customer or complicated structure or setup around like those workflows, we can build that into the system and deploy that quickly as demand requires. But yeah, permissions are really important. It's so important when it comes to sensitive information. The way that we've always thought about it is we should architect to the lowest common denominator from the get-go. The product is extensible and flexible enough that no matter what type of business you are and what your workflows are and what your permission levels are, we can tweak that to support that customer, which is something that is a lot harder to do when you haven't been built natively in the cloud from the get-go. A familiar story from one of my previous employers, but the same principle applies and just really helps us to serve our customers better.
Yeah, I assume you must like it compared to the maybe lower level of granularity where you've come from in Xero. That can be a big frustration for individuals. And from what I've seen in Employment Hero, that it's not got that same thing. But the other thing that I think is really important from a data security point of view is directing people to what they need to see. And this goes purely on the employee level, right? At the moment, if you've got a HR system, you've got a payroll system, the employee has to work out what they're going to log into to deal with what they need to focus on. So it could be their timesheets in one area, that accessing their payslips in another. It could even be scheduling in another app. If it's all in one app, they know where to go. It also, as well as being more secure for them, they always know where to go. They don't have to worry about different passwords, different security access. The data is always all in one place. You can turn it on and off. And I think that's a good thing. And I assume that's what basically the Swag app is doing.
Yeah. Yeah, the Swag app is the employee's passport into their employment experience with their employer. Everything from storing all their contractual information at their fingertips, their pay slips, being able to clock in, clock out if you're a shift worker, 360-degree feedback, one-to-ones, all of that stuff is inside that app. And so they have an employee experience that allows them to interact. And as we've said before, it's like the same data in real time, and the employer is able to feed that information back. Yeah, there's no risk of seeing the wrong thing or having to go into multiple places or having to go through number of firewalls just to get your P60 from last year. It's all available in that system. One of the really cool things that came with the KeePay acquisition was PensionSync. You think about pensions, we all know how horrible it is. I do. I've worked at, I don't know how many companies since I've been in the UK, and I've got all these different pension schemes, and just trying to piece them all together is just a bit of a nightmare. So having pensions inside the product, and we've got some really cool stuff coming down the line around how we're going to improve the experience with pension selections and that sort of stuff. But you name it, it's everything employment and everything you as an employee would love to have at your fingertips. We're on a mission to get that in the hands of the employees and help free up time for the employers to get on with the day job of being better employers.
As you say, payroll is the fundamental place, isn't it, where we're dealing with probably an organization's most valuable data potentially, and obviously quite personal data and things like that. So it's good to know that you guys have got rightly security sort of top of the priority list and things like that. And yeah, we'll look forward to seeing more product developments, more improvements on that side, and how you've balanced the challenge of getting security and usability working in harmony. That's the real difficulty, right?
Yeah, totally. Cheers, John.
It's a flashback. This is Will Farnell's interview on the release of his book called The Human Firm, which was published earlier this year by Sage. Myself, John and Ryan join Will, where he calls out a few of the chapters that he has spent some time writing on. We think it's a great little interview, even after all this time. We hope you enjoy it, and sorry, Will, for the late release of this. Will, how are you? Thank you for joining us today. How are you doing?
Hi, Indy. I'm great, thank you. Suitably recovered from Countex, although I did miss a Countex, so apologies. I thought I'd missed the boat, but it seems I could have just rocked up and drunk at the free bar anyway.
Countex, the only thing you would have missed is the opportunity to throw an axe at John Toon. But there's always time for that.
Was he the target? No wonder it's so popular.
We mounted a little picture on every single board.
There were a lot of inquiries.
It's the only thing I was mounted on.
And now for the main event, the man himself.
What, Will or John?
I don't want to say it.
Most X-rated man.
X-rated. Not yet. No, that will be the year after when we do a Countax naked or something like that.
Amazing.
Is it? Wait. John, you said you were prepping something for Digital Catchy Show. Is that what this is?
It's a big surprise. Yeah, it's a big reveal.
It's not anybody else.
The irony is I do need someone to run it because neither are you or I going to be there. So Indy's going to have to do it. So it seems only appropriate that she decides the dress code. Should we get on with this?
Yes, let's crack on.
I'm delighted to talk to the godfather of the cloud accounting world, certainly in the UK, if not the world. Will, always great to see you. And I'm going to do a James Aspridge and whip your book out because I do have it available here. This is the next iteration of your series of books, of which I'm told there's, what, another six or seven in the pipeline?
Couldn't possibly comment. I like the sticker on that, John. Nice sticker on
front. It's a very nice sticker, isn't it? Yeah, it's got my name on, because one of us on this podcast has something interesting to say occasionally, especially when it's edited down into small words. Tell us a little bit about why you felt the need to write The Human Firm.
For those that don't know, The Digital Firm was released in 2018, and that book is very much a reflective view. At the time I wrote that book, it talked about what we were doing as a firm and what we'd done over what would have been about 11 years at the time that that book came out. And it's still really relevant. Lots of people read it. And we've seen a spike in sales since The Human Firm, which is great as well. Probably because we tell people at stage one is you've got to do The Digital Firm. So if they're picking up the new book, haven't read the first book, then there's a slight prompt there to go and read the first book. The Human Firm's slightly different in that it's much more of a horizon scanning perspective. So yes, a lot of it's based on things that we've done as a firm, but some of that is taking what we talked about in The Digital Firm on a bit in terms of what we've learned over the last 5 years. But a big chunk of it is really about where I think we're going when I look at the wider landscape. And fundamentally, the start point for this is that we are at a point where every accounting firm in the world can use the same tech. So we can all go out and we can all buy general ledgers, we can buy pre-accounting tools, we can buy reporting tools, we can buy payment tools. And there's enough content out there on the internet from not only us, but other firms that have built the processes that sit underneath all of that tech to make it effective. So we have a level playing field. And the only thing that people can't instantly replicate is our people. So the way that we engage our teams, but also what we do that's unique in terms of what we deliver for clients. So how we take the tech, how we take the processes that we've refined over the years, and how we take the people that we're fortunate to have in our team and chuck those in a mixing pot, and what we output from that in terms of what we do for clients. So really this book is about how do we make sure that now, and I say this carefully because we're probably going to backtrack and unwind it, if we accept that we can no longer have a USP through technology, then it's the next iteration of what we can use to create USPs. Having said that, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it, we know adoption's still rubbish. So there is still this opportunity for firms that want to use tech effectively, but we're horizon scanning and we're looking beyond the next 12, 24 months with what I talk about in the book.
You referenced the contribution that I made, but obviously you spoke to lots of other people in the industry and gauged their commentary and insights and everything else. That sort of idea or that concept of tech being a differentiator and it no longer existing, do you think there's a particular reason for that? Or is it just because we've got to a level of maturity in the market that's managed to get us that position?
I think this is the point, that it's to some extent for firms that are in that top quartile, whatever that looks like, tech UK market. The fact that they're in that top quartile is evidence of the fact that they were prepared to be bold with their business model, with their approach to technology. So naturally, they're going to be the first people that are looking at the next iteration. When we were doing this stuff in 2009 and through to probably about 2015, we were in a tiny minority. So, okay, that was a bunch of us, and the fact we were doing what we were doing with tech was enough. That pot is bigger now. So there's much more competition between those leading firms. And the book's talking as much to those that have adopted in the last 5 years that are still in the top quartile, because 75%, if we're using quarters, whereas actually I think it's 80, are still heads firmly buried in the sand, working out what Dext is, for example, which is just astonishing. I was talking to the guys at Accountex, and they still get people come up to them and say, so Dext, what do you do? It gives a sense of reality in terms of where large proportions of the market still are. So it's about those leading firms saying, where do we go next? Where's our next innovation? We've got the tech working, we've built the processes. What is it that's going to make us unique?
Tech can still be a differentiator. Obviously, ChatGPT has been hugely popular if you look at everyone's LinkedIn feeds and things like that. And there are elements of automation as well where firms are exploring that. So there is still an opportunity to do that. But if tech adoption is slow, do you think it will continue to be slow? Or is the breadth of firms operating in the market just getting more and more stretched? In the early days, 10, 15 years ago, firms like yourselves, for example, were exploring the cutting edge, which was the new cloud accounting GLs, which, although they were cutting edge, were fundamentally just an iteration of something pre-existing. Now, of course, we've got AI, we've got machine learning, automation at one end, but also we've still got firms at the other end of the spectrum still on desktop products and not actually moved ahead at all. So is that spectrum just getting wider? Is that what we're seeing?
It certainly seems like it, doesn't it? And I absolutely take your point that it isn't a case of we can forget tech now. It's all about people, because actually you need the tech in place to get the best out of the people and give the people the capacity they need to make the impact that we should be striving to make in the lives of the clients that we serve, both at a business owner and a business level. That's a big thrust of what the book is about. Fundamentally, we've got to remember why we exist. I talk about purpose a lot in the book, and having clarity around what is it that we're actually here to do, what is it that gets us out of bed in the morning, and how can we best deliver on that purpose. And I can't believe there's not any firm that wouldn't be supported in doing that with tech. So it's still fundamental. We've got to make sure we're using tech to do the things that frees us up to do the stuff that we need to do. And the whole ChatGPT thing was really interesting. Literally halfway through writing the book, ChatGPT hit the news. And it's, whoa, this makes the message in this book even more critical, that we're seeing tech come along and do things that up until that point were human driven. So we made the decision that actually we were going to be really genuine and authentic in the way that we use the contributions from people and captured transcribed conversations. And it actually means that when you read the book, it's sometimes quite hard to read because we write in a different way to the way we speak, but we wanted them to feel like real conversations.
You talked about purpose there. That's a sort of theme that runs through this book. Can purpose become a distraction for a firm? Because we hear all these stories about how transformative having a good accountant can be and how the positive impacts that we can have. But are firms good at distilling what their purpose is and should be? And are they good at communicating that to their staff?
No, and that's the problem. fundamentally what we're talking about. And what I did very much in the first book and have done so in this book to a point as well is highlight the challenges that we've had as a firm that scaled very quickly over a fairly short period of time. And we fundamentally got that wrong. I had a very clear purpose in terms of why I set the firm up. And as we grew, it was easy enough for me to maintain that dialogue and make sure that people got it and understood it. But we got beyond the tipping point where I couldn't do it and we had to rely on other people to do it. And it's really easy to take your eye off the ball and that stuff gets diluted. And that very much happened in our business. And we've spent the last 18 months, 2 years going back and unraveling that and putting it back again and doing things like values refresh and things. So absolutely, it's really easy to lose sight of it and pay lip service to it. But actually, the point I make in the book is that it was probably only at the start of things going wrong that I was able to directly correlate the early success of the firm to clarity of purpose, because everything I did was driven by the thing that I set the firm up to deliver in the first place. Yeah. And as soon as we stopped focusing on that, we started to do things that weren't in line with what we set out to do as a firm.
And when you say you could directly see those having an impact on the business, three of us here are accountants. When you talk about a negative impact, was that having a negative financial impact as well, ultimately?
Financial performance, individual performance, cultural performance, because it kind of underpins everything. And if you don't focus completely on the purpose, you focus on other things that are a distraction from your purpose.
And another theme that's in the book is around accountants being too nice. But how do you balance being too nice with purpose, which quite often is to serve our clients as effectively as we can?
That's not saying that we service our clients in the best way we can, deliver the right outcomes for our clients at detriment to ourselves as business owners and accounting firms. So fundamentally, we have to make a living. If we want to service our clients in the best possible way, we've got to be a sustainable business. The shift is from kind of practice mindset to business owner mindset. And how do we do that? How do we think more commercially about what we do and how we do it? What we said is we need to be commercial, but not corporate. And so it's like almost winding it back in terms of, look, we don't want to be corporate. That's not us. That's not who we are. But we need to be more commercial than we were as a scaling, entrepreneurial driven accounting firm. So how do we get the balance between being really focused on the things that we want to do, that was around, we want to do things differently, we want to tear up the rule book because we think the old rules aren't appropriate anymore. But at the same time, we've got to do it in a way that is commercial to enable us to invest in our team, invest in the right tech to make sure that we can deliver on the things that are fundamental to us as a business.
And how do you embed that into the organization? Because obviously, as a business owner, in theory, that should be quite easy to think like a business owner, right? Although that's part of the point that you're making. But clearly, within firms, particularly as they're growing, you're going to bring on more and more staff. And more and more staff are not necessarily going to think as a business owner because they don't have a stake in the business other than what they get paid.
This balance of the human firm model that underpins the whole book is effectively a circle with two halves to it. And the top half is client and the bottom half is the team. And it's finding the balance between those two often kind of forces pulling in different directions, and how do you pull it together and make sure that they're aligned and they're aligned around the purpose. So that's the point, is we've got to get the team to understand why they should be focused on the purpose. What's the benefit to them? We believe that it's much more exciting being involved in a high growth accounting firm than a static firm that's growing by single digit growth every year and new opportunities are not being created and opportunities for growth are not there. One thing I've picked up working with hundreds of accounting firms over the last few years, every firm I go into, the common denominator is that everyone cares about the client. So it's that mindset of nice, which is in the book, but it's built into the DNA of people that work in accounting firms that we genuinely care about the client. So what we've got to do is make sure that everybody understands the things that we do and why we do it and the benefit directly or indirectly to the client, because that's what drives everybody. Everybody really cares about what we deliver for the client. So if we're changing tech or we're changing process or we're putting in place new frameworks or whatever, how does that directly impact the client. That's the easiest way for us to get buy-in from the team to drive new approaches and new ways of working.
Do you think that means we need to change the way that we think about reward strategies as well for people and organizations? Because a traditional firm, in inverted commas, is going to pay people a salary with fairly basic benefits. And talking to other firms that would class themselves in that top 25% of progressive firms are much more structured around goals that are specifically oriented to performance and not just financial performance, but customer satisfaction. Is that essential, do you think, now?
I think so. And that's coupled in with the whole business partnership model dead, what's happening with private equity, changing the models in accounting firms. The driver for many was being a partner and being an equity partner. And as firms move away from a partnership model, then what's the driver? What's the incentive now? Because we almost had a profession that underpaid people because the golden egg was the partnership at the end of it. So how does that impact if you get all of this private equity where the partnership route isn't there anymore, firms move into corporate models? What does that do in terms of changing the pay structures on that journey to that level? We're certainly looking at how we restructure reward, and we're certainly focusing on competency frameworks and making sure that our performance management frameworks are linked back to purpose, vision, values, to make sure that we're driving the right behaviors and measuring with the right metrics around things like NPS score, both for employee and for client. So there is a big shift. And then we've got the whole flexible working umbrella to sit over the top of that. And what does that do for productivity and everything else? So we'll see where it goes over the next few years.
Connected to that, sometimes there's a few books like this and similar ones are aimed at smaller firms, but are there takeaways for a larger firm like the ones, for example, that Ryan and I work at? And coupled with that, there's a general issue around attracting talent into our market. And so you and I both know Maisie Poskett, for example, at BHP, and she's done some really interesting work around sort of Gen Z and what their needs and wants and desires in the workplace are and how they correlate with other generations. Is there something that we need to do to make accountancy more inviting for Gen Z? And does that need to change whether you're a small firm, a mid-sized firm, or one of the big four, for example?
Yes, that's the point. And I'd like to think that the first book was equally as relevant to larger firms as this one, because it's stuff that we're all talking about. And we're a firm of, I don't know, 75 people or whatever, wherever we are at the moment. We're not quite a big firm, but we're not a small firm either. You mentioned Maisie. Maisie's also a contributor to the book. So Maisie's got a sticker too. And that's the point. We've got a real mix of contributors. Another guy who I was really pleased spent some time talking to us was a guy called Kenji Kuramoto, Vacuity in the US. And Kenji scaled his firm to kind of 160 or so people inside about 9 years. So we've got a real mix of contributors. It's not just me and my stories. We're bringing in other people with different perspectives. So that's always what I try and do, is just get people to think a little differently about what they do and ask themselves those probing questions in terms of, are we doing everything we can? Is the stuff that we can do to make a positive impact on the people that work for us or the clients that we serve?
There's a part in the book as well that talks about, in fact, I'll read it here, it's about tribalism and the new landscape of sharing. That's a really fascinating part of the book, because, again, linking back to the previous book, the entry into the market of people like Xero and then followed by QuickBooks and others really changed the landscape in terms of, all of a sudden, you were creating communities of accountants, particularly originally at the smaller end of the space, who were talking to each other regularly about their problems and their successes and everything else. And that's definitely spread more certainly into the mid-tier. Why was that relevant?
I just think that it's been one of the biggest shifts that I've seen 15 years now, coming up 16 years. I set my firm up in May 2007. Oh, left my day job in May 2007.
None of us were born back then.
I should say. I look back at that point in time and imagine if another accounting firm had said, oh yeah, I'll sit and have a cup of coffee with you and tell you about our GP margins and the way that we use tech and the processes that we use in our firm. It's not hope in hell. There's no way anyone would have done that, because it was competitive. I'm not saying that the landscape is no longer competitive, but it is collaborative. That's really positive. And it may just be that I was a new entrant and I was doing things that other people didn't quite understand. So maybe it did exist and people just saw me in my garage as a bit of a threat, but who knows?
I don't think it did exist.
No. Okay, that's great. It's good reassurance. And then it was even pre-Xero. So our journey, for those that don't know, we partnered with Cashflow in 2008, and Xero hadn't quite landed on these shores. If they had, they weren't overly visible. And even at that point, there was something about it in terms of, whilst it was competitive, people would talk and would share, and Receipt Bank came along and did their practice exchanges for lunches and get somebody like me to come in and talk to firms about what we were doing. But ultimately, we have to salute Xero for creating this community vibe. But equally, the point about tribalism is that it went too far, in my view, that it became almost something that didn't feel right in terms of the way that people would don the tribal colors. And that's where we started to say, hang on a second, guys, let's recognize that we're all in this together, and it isn't a case of you can only wear one t-shirt.
It's almost as if it's gone round on itself, right? Because the tribalism used to exist between competing firms in competing regions, and now the tribalism exists within the tech space.
Your software choice.
which is ironic. Maybe that begs the question then, why choose Sage to help publish the book?
A really good question, that one. So I've spent the best part of 8 or 9 years banging my head against a brick wall with vendors because they have great software, and most of the software we're talking about here requires a change of mindset, a change of business model to get the best out of it. You guys know, if you want to key data into any of the cloud-based general ledgers, then it's going to be less efficient than it would be batch entering into Sage 50. So we've got to change the business model, but there needs to be the education to help firms understand what they need to change, why they need to change it. And the number of times that I've said to software companies over the years that we can sell your software better than you, because we can talk about how we use it and the impact that it's had on us. And Sage had done the Go Proposal acquisition, which took a number of people by surprise. Then they did Futrli one before Accountex last year, and Futrli asked me to go and do a video as part of the launch or the announcement of the acquisition the day before Accountex. And James Ashford was running a Go Proposal event at the same venue. And we got talking about the fact that Sage had published James's second book. And I got on my soapbox and started whinging again about vendors not doing education. And I mentioned to James that I'd been talking about this second book for some time. And he said, leave it with me. I think I've got a plan. So it was a bold move for Sage, because we're known as being a Xero firm. We acquired a firm that used Sage products. We still use Go Proposal alongside Ignition. We use a bit of Futrli. So we became a Sage customer on the back of those acquisitions. But no, bold for them to do it. But for me, I couldn't have asked for somebody with better reach. And hopefully that's become clear on the basis that everybody's seen and heard about the book. Sage are back in the race. It's really interesting to see what they're doing in the space right now. The acquisition strategy is the only sensible acquisition strategy I've seen. And I don't know, you guys have talked about acquisition strategies a few times on the podcast. So the focus is right. And I think they genuinely have a vested interest in the partner channel, which is what's important to me.
Just to wrap up, what's the one thing that you're taking away from the book, or the contributions that you're turning back into Farnell Clark to direct the future?
A really good question. You could have teed me up with that one, John. The book is our blueprint as well. And I've made that perfectly clear to our team. If you really want to understand where we want to be as a business, then read the book, the same as I'm encouraging other firms to do, because it's my vision to a large degree. And yes, there's contributions that have shaped and molded it and re-clarified what it is we're doing. But the biggest piece out of it is that tech is going to continue to chip away at the things that accountants have historically generated revenue from. So therefore, we have no choice but to think broader in terms of the things that we can do to replace the stuff the tech's chipping away at. And I said the same thing 5 years ago in a digital firm. It hasn't moved as quickly as I hoped it would, but the fact that we weren't talking about ChatGPT and then we were is an indicator of the pace of development. So it's really about what can we really focus on that is the stuff that is going to shore up our ability to impact the lives of clients in a way that technology can't.
Super. Thank you very much for that, Will. And thanks for your insights as always. And I'm sure all three of us will catch up with you, Will.
Absolutely.
And congratulations on the book becoming a bestseller. I genuinely do look forward to seeing your next book in a few years' time when you get to reflect on where the human firm has taken us. And maybe it'll all be about the robotic firm or something.
I
did actually register the human firm domain shortly after I wrote the digital firm. Maybe I'd better get on that quick before somebody else registers the robotic firm. Amazing. But great to talk to you, John and Indy and Ryan. Thanks so much, guys.
So first thing in the news that we have is the launch by Tax on Demand of their Copilot product. Everyone calls their large language model a Copilot. We have a Copilot, and this has been trained on a whole host of HMRC documentation, bits off the website, all of their guides, etc., etc. And it was launched with a sort of a beta for people to try out. And it's been supported by the likes of Paul Applin, Rebecca Pennyworth, to help accountants, advisors, test out the capabilities of using a large language model trained on the tons and tons of documentation that HMRC create. So I know Nick Stubbs quite well, and I saw this at Accountex North a few weeks ago when we were up there to see that. And it looks quite promising. The interesting thing with these, of course, is to find out whether or not there are any issues in terms of the reliability of the information. And I'm not a tax advisor, so I've handed it over to our tax guys here at Beaver & Struthers to take a look at, and hopefully we'll get some good feedback on it.
Yeah, it seems very powerful if it works. The idea of being able to feed any question in and it come back with the actual tax legislation is an incredibly powerful thought, and something that should help every single accountant that deals with tax, which is pretty much every single accountant. So if it is effective, it's a brilliant first launch of a Todd product. Is that correct?
It's the first launch of anything official. Yeah, they've had the other parts of Todd are still in testing as far as I'm aware.
I've got a little something of a launch as well, as we were at Accountex recently, and there's a big push around firm check and AML software. So actually, there's a big push around AML software generally as the new gold. Firm check launched in the UK. It's an app that was backed by the Xero co-founder Hamish Edwards, and it generally looks at AML as a whole life cycle. So you can log in and offer AML checks, ID address and biometric verification, and the PEPs and sanctions checks that you need. So the tool is linked to a company's house, and so it can pull the user's entity and individual details while they're carrying out the AML clearance, and then they can do a live verification of their ID via the app. So there's a dashboard and a client workspace where the existing clients are shown, and that you can set user access levels to allow sort of a money laundering reporting officer to have control over who is approving and collaborating on the AML checks. But the only thing that I noted that was probably not as convenient for most accountants is that it's standalone at the moment, so it doesn't link to everything. And that is helpful from an AML perspective, but probably not as helpful as having it integrated into workflow or the CRM system. I think they've got future plans to do that. And the checks as well, they're available on a pay-as-you-go basis.
Yeah, I believe they've not integrated actually from a strategic perspective based on feedback from accountants, because an early iteration of the software went through Early Adopters Hub, and the feedback generally was actually we need certain functionality to work inside the system before the integrations are in place. That integration would be great, would help with that whole onboarding process. AML is way more than just onboarding, it's constant. You're doing it on at least an annual cycle. So the fact that they've gone down that route, got the system better from a functionality point of view before the integrations, I think is a better first step. I've got something following on from one of our recent app news, which was the launch of QuickBooks Online Intuit Assist. There has been an initial testing of this by an individual called Liz Scott, who does a lot with Intuit over in the States. And she gave a couple of examples of how this could work. One was creating a mailing campaign by using Intuit Assist to talk directly to MailChimp. So you create your mail campaign, and then you could ask it in the same breath to create a mailing list based on your recent customers that are in QuickBooks Online. So the beauty of the fact that this tool sits across the main products inside the Intuit space means that you can collaborate or pull information from multiple different parts of the Intuit sphere. And I think that's going to be a very powerful way of making this work. Because I know we've had chatbots in the past integrated with finance tools, and it's not really been effective. But I think this one actually might work quite effectively.
Intuit is launching QuickBooks Money, which is a subscription-free model. It's moving towards a freemium approach for small businesses, freelancers, so that they can manage their overheads in a more accessible way. There's a few different features that are included in it. So expense tracking, invoicing capabilities, so you can produce invoices, financial reporting, so they have limited access, but some access to financial reporting capabilities, and tax preparation, so helping with the initial tax related issues at entrepreneur space. So it is a bit of a change for them because they are deviating from what was that recurring monthly subscription model. Not sure how viable you think it is in the long term. Obviously it's QuickBooks that are doing it, so you'd like to think that this is a great way of encouraging and promoting entrepreneurs to get really stuck into a software, and then as they end up accruing more wealth and more business, then move them over to a paid subscription, which is what you'd get with a range of different softwares like HubSpot, who offer their first year, or they used to offer their first couple of years entirely free, and then you are completely saddled and stuck. Thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not really sure, to be honest, about this. I think Intuit, you know, massive organization, so they clearly would hopefully know what they're doing. I just don't know. I always find these kind of freemium models a little bit challenging sometimes, because I think sometimes you run the risk of not necessarily attracting the kind of business, the kind of clients that you necessarily want. Yeah, I just wonder whether they're trying to compete with something like Wave or some of the smaller products that are, you know, more popular in North America than have proven to be over here in the UK, and whether that's just a reaction to that and they feel like they're nibbling away at some of their bottom line.
Very possibly. They've got a free version over in the US. They have to. That's a legal requirement for them too, because they assigned something so the US government didn't develop their own free version, but that's on a personal tax submission level. But I believe they get a lot of paid subscriptions on the back of that by offering a free version and upselling. So maybe they've looked at it and gone, okay, we've got a model that works. Let's now spread this into other areas and grow it. I've mostly seen free finance software then slowly become paid over time rather than go the other way, which is what Intuit are doing.
The other side of it that you see is that you sometimes get a free version, but you just pay extra on charges, don't you, for transactions and stuff, which is, I always think, it's a little bit deceptive, because it's always a bit hidden away.
The question is whether you think that any of the other software players will follow suit, because it is a very disruptive approach to land grab. So would Xero, Sage, or any of the others be able to replicate this move?
Well, they could replicate it, whether they want to do it and whether they'll make it successful. I don't know. If you look at where they've positioned themselves, I think Xero positioned themselves as the premium out of the three. I don't see them offering a free version. Sage could do, but I don't think they would, because they're trying to transition all their existing clients from Sage 50 or to Sage Business Cloud. So they need to have a premium, a paid subscription model to do that. I don't see either of those having a strategy warranting it.
What I think is really interesting about this is 10 years ago, freemium model was all linked to being able to sell you more, as you said, transactional services, John, or bolt in advertising. So they made money in another way. But what we do know about accounting data is that it is now becoming so much more interesting for large language models, as you were saying about Todd, that whatever QuickBooks is doing, I think there's monetization value longer term, AI data, and in that startup ecosystem to be able to be the voice on it and to then deliver value back to startups in that way. It's going to be fascinating to see if they can nail it. That's a huge opportunity.
I agree with you, and I agree there's some value in the data. I just wonder, where I've seen this more often is in consumer products, so not really in B2B products. And what you quite often find is that once a consumer gets to a limit where they have to be almost forced to pay for a product, they don't necessarily pay for the product. They just move on to a different free product. So it's interesting to see whether or not that will entice more people to use the product, and whether you will just get this slightly transitory set of users that will move on if they breach the limits. Anyway, shall we cover one more piece of QuickBooks Intuit news? Because it seems to be all about them at the moment. So they have just launched their new practice manager tool. It's gone live in the last couple of weeks. This is trying to do something similar to what we see in the Xero ecosystem with HQ and sort of Xero practice manager, although obviously we've spoken about where that's going to at the moment. And this was actually announced back in March, I think it was, at QuickBooks Connect, but it's now finally available out there in the marketplace. And it's got all of the kind of usual functionality that you would expect. So you can create engagement letters, you can do automated emails to welcome clients on board, you can do document requests. It's got a company's house integration, you can do AML stuff as well, which is through connection with Xamarin. And maybe that's not all that surprising because QuickBooks practice management is actually powered by Pixie, which a lot of UK users will be familiar with. It'll be interesting to see how this white labeling exercise goes, whether people prefer to use the QuickBooks product or whether people prefer to use Pixie as a standalone with QuickBooks. It's a great opportunity for Pixie, particularly if this is successful in the UK and they can maybe replicate that success in the US.
I got something that's end of life for Xero by the sound of it. And maybe this is linked and you guys will know a little bit more about the Xero Pay and the announcements that were made at XeroCon. Xero Pay with Wise will be removed from the 26th of February, 2024. So anyone that was using Xero Pay with Wise will no longer be able to do that. It was a way that you were able to have a clearing account for bill payments that were being made from Xero, and the money would then be deposited into a clearing account and submitted and pays out the suppliers after the money has been transferred from your bank account. You can't add it to your subscription. This is the Xero approach to making sure that their strategic alliance with Stripe is shored up. Any thoughts? Is it anti-competitive?
I'm not sure it's anti-competitive or just reflective of the fact that the Pay with Wise solution never really solved the problem, as it were, in terms of, we've talked about payments in the ecosystem for ages now, particularly off the back of open banking. And the problem with the Pay with Wise functionality was that it was pretty basic. It wasn't great in comparison to other payment solutions out there in the market. It was reasonably costly. And actually, for me, it's a little bit disappointing because TransferWise, as they were and now became Wise, you know, one of the first Xero partners here in the UK. You had a really tight, really interesting integration, and you're still very popular with people looking for accounts, particularly when they're doing FX. And I think they could have made so much more of it, and it just hasn't really come about. Whether that's Xero's fault, whether that's Wise's fault, that's 50-50. Not sure. But yeah, I think this could have been a really powerful partnership, and it's somewhat fallen by the wayside.
Let's be fair. They released something on the first to release something similar or that tried to streamline payments in the UK a number of years ago. And I agree with you. It was too cumbersome to really take off from how they designed it. And I think they've just canned it because of that. There's so many other great payment solutions in the marketplace that it's just not needed anymore. And I don't see others using it.
Perfect. And talking about great payment solution providers in the market, Modular have announced a new integration with Xero. So for anyone that's not familiar, Modular is probably actually one of the biggest payment providers out there, certainly in the UK market. I think they've got around about 500 staff, something like that. A sizable organization. Probably made their name in the early days with a fairly tight Sage payroll integration. And that's certainly where they made early strides in the marketplace, but have now launched this partnership with Xero. And you know, can enable single or batch payments and also allow you to consolidate up multiple payments to the same organization into one single payment. So you don't have this kind of slight complication that you do have sometimes with some of the payment providers in terms of talking about the problems with Wise and their payments was that if you wanted to pay four invoices for the same person, that went as four separate payments. And so potentially incurred you additional cost and also additional administrative pain for the recipient as well as the sender. Modular can deal with that. So that's great news. I think this is just another solution out there in the market. It's going to be interesting to see how much traction they get with Xero customers because there's a hell of a lot of competition out there. And Modular, as is fairly normal now, they offer this kind of hybrid set of solutions. So they offer wallets connected to traditional banking and open banking payment solutions as well.
Yeah, it's another great integration. Surprised Modular have taken so long to get there, but I think that's probably because they were quite deep in with Sage for a while, and maybe now that they're opening out and building integrations to other solutions to expand their revenue. I've got a few other bits from Xero, probably some quite quick ones here. So firstly, we talked about the fact that at XeroCon in Australia and New Zealand, they announced they were releasing AI into their support center. that is already hitting the UK market. They are starting to release this to slowly over time, train the model, test it. I believe it goes to the first 10% or 20% of customers over the next month or so, and then it will scale up and roll out over time. So the fact that they've announced it and it's already coming in, I think it's great news. Another thing that they've released on the back end in the API recently, which should help anyone that's looking to onboard lots of clients into various systems, is they enable bulk adding of multiple clients in one go. So an app can opt to connect into multiple clients in one go, bring them all their data across into that app. It's like a one-off when it's initially connected. And that's something that, say you've got a reporting tool you want to bring in. If that reporting tool has enabled this functionality, you could add all your clients at once rather than each one individually, which was a frustration. So that's quite good. It'll take a little while for that to roll out to the apps for them to build into this tool. But the fact that Xero have enabled this, I think is quite powerful. And then my favorite bit that I've experienced in the last week, if you've ever used the Xero Support Center, the ticketed system where you'll put a message in and then someone will come back and they're either great in their response, they have no idea what you're talking about, and you go back and forth. The ticketed system in Xero for support is probably one of the most frustrating elements of Xero, at least from my perspective and the clients that I work with's perspective. But I had a really good engagement where I put something in there. They responded. I was like, this isn't helping. And they called me and we solved it straight away on the phone. And I think that is a brilliant enhancement of what they do, in that, yeah, you can't call them, but if they pick up that actually we need to resolve this more promptly, that they are now proactively calling you, I think is a great step in the right direction.
And how does that work, Ryan? Because you have been able to say, please call me on this number in help support chats with Xero before, but obviously that's not time bound, if you like, because they could take anywhere between a couple of hours to maybe a couple of days to come back to you. So is it much more prompt now, that response?
I got called within 2 minutes of posting frustration in the support ticket. But I believe you still have to have your phone number logged in your profile. Otherwise, they've got nowhere to call. They may say we should have a call, but make sure you've got your profile updated so that they can reach out if you want. I believe it's not going to be to everyone across the board. It depends on what your query is and if it's something that can be answered and resolved very promptly. I had a technical bank feed query that was very hard to get an answer going back and forth. So it made sense for a call to occur, and that's what we did.
Amazing. Sounds great. Moving on, I have hot off the heels of our attendance at AccountX North was that Swoop made a big announcement with Sage to say that they've joined forces and bundling in with all of the Sage products, GoProposal, Futrli, AutoEntry, and obviously the wider Sage suite. And what they are proposing to offer basically is that if you are on any of the aforementioned, you have exclusive discount on the Advisor and Advisor Plus packages that Swoop offer, as long as you switch to a 12-month contract. And so that enables you to access a Swoop funding platform for loans, grants, other equity funding and things like that as well, so that you've got access to that. And they also have announced a direct integration with both Sage and Tact, which I think is possibly one of the first ERP integrations that any of the funding platforms have got, and Sage Business Cloud accounting software. So again, for anyone that's familiar with any of the sort of funding platforms, having your clients' financial data in the system is quite helpful in terms of just identifying potential opportunities. Also sometimes helps along with either some of the forecasting requirements for funding or for just helping when you've got to get financial information to some of the funders. Yeah, it's a great opportunity. It's inevitable that we would see platforms like this integrating with Sage, because unfortunately for Sage, they're always last after Xero and QuickBooks, but they always get there in the end. And I think that integration with Intacct is going to be really powerful, because Intacct is the absolute driving force of all of Sage's cloud offerings as far as the organization is concerned.
Apron have done a major raise, and to the tune of 12 million, so a substantial amount. Actually, it's quite hot off the heels of their 5 million that we covered maybe a month or so back. It's super quick. We were laughing and joking about that of Avengers-style lineup of investors, but turns out it's pretty bloody handy. So they've now released a few other things, which, John, I'll let you waffle on. I'll let you cover. But the only bit that I thought was super interesting is they've got a lot of different innovations planned. And they've got their own proprietary payment rails, which is very different for how any of the payments providers are handling it. It's almost like its own version of how go cardless would work on their own rails. And they are touting that if there's good companies still out there, they still get investor attention, which I think is, yes, true, but you had a stellar lineup to go with there. So actually, I think it's slightly different. There are a lot of good payment apps out there, but I'm quite intrigued to see how this one develops. John, anything that you know on the latest features?
Yes. So one of the big new features that they've announced is the ability to send remittance advices off to suppliers to let them know that they've been paid. And this might sound like a little bit of a basic thing, but it's quite handy, particularly when you're making lots of payments in an organization. And also, obviously, from the other side, when you're sending that to your suppliers, they don't have to play that game of trying to figure out what it is that you've actually paid. Because, you know, if you send a sort of a fairly round lump sum that covers three or four invoices, it's not always clear what those are for. So it's a great little feature. It's clear that what Apron are doing is, alongside raising shitloads of money by the sounds of it, is that they are listening to their customers, listening to their needs and requirements, and they have promised to continue building out features, which is great for them.
It is good. So I've got another one, seeing as we're talking about raises. A European carbon accounting startup Plan A, because there is no Plan B, raises 27 million from VCs and a lot of corporate heavyweights. It's an extension on their original Series A, which was to the tune of 10 million. So it's quite a substantial uplift. I don't know as much about this application at all, but we've spoken in the past about the importance of being able to accurately track carbon accounting. Guys, what are your thoughts? Is it one for you?
I think you saying there's no Plan B will very much annoy the wrapper, but the main thing that I would say is that carbon accounting is still very subjective at the moment for everything that I've experienced. And although you've got a lot of tools out there, there's not one tool that does it massively effectively. Yes, I think it's brilliant. I can't believe they've raised so much money over this period of time for something that is, I don't know, subjective. There's a huge opportunity if it becomes mandated that you have to do this across all businesses, that someone needs to be at the forefront. And if they're going to be at the forefront, great.
This whole sort of ESG reporting, carbon reporting is massively topical at the moment. And as Ryan said, there is an absolute shedload of money being piled into these kind of products and stuff. And despite that tenuous attempt to stay relevant by mentioning a wrapper, Ryan, I think that's fairly disgraceful. I think one of the things that we did get news about fairly recently was that Comma have finally bitten the dust in terms of being a payment platform. And they were in the early days of the open banking wave and had also raised a reasonable amount of money. And then, as we've seen, it's not been all that successful in terms of the platform is no longer there. Clearly, the technology and other stuff is part of what they were when Weaver took them over. But I think there's going to be a word of caution around this, is that, yes, carbon reporting is probably going to be a fairly big requirement. The problem is that for a lot of accountants and for a lot of businesses, it's not well defined as to what the requirements are. And so whilst people are chucking money at this, there are going to be some failures over a period of time.
There's very chuggy. Have you heard that? I think it's hugely ageist when someone says this, but allegedly chuggy is when someone who is like a millennial tries to over-identify as being relevant with maybe a younger generation. So it's a very chuggy move.
Are you saying that Ryan, you can't be saying that Ryan's a millennial, surely?
He is a millennial.
God, no.
Anyway, I have...
No, I thought he was like Gen X or...
He is not.
a baby boomer.
I've got one last one. A huge congrats to our homegirl, LMH, who has exited Silverfin to Visma. Silverfin, which was founded in 2013, Belgium company, concentrates on the big four in terms of accounting software. They built quite a sizable base of customers, 850 direct customers, servicing 320,000 end clients. Massive congrats to them on the exit to Visma. And it sounds like it's a really good synergy with the rest of the Visma portfolio, from what I understand. Any inside intel, Mr. Tune?
Potentially, but probably none that could be broadcast. My only insights, if you like, on the deal is that obviously HG Capital were a shareholder in Silverfin. They'd made a minority acquisition, which was quite well publicized about sort of 5 years ago, I think it was. I can't quite remember exactly when. And off the back of the announcements, it looks like they've made a reasonable return on that investment. Although it is quite interesting because they are an investor in Visma as well. So they've divested themselves from a direct ownership into an indirect one through the group. But that's all good. Visma is an astonishing organization, which probably doesn't get all that much recognition in the UK because they are big in Europe, but not really big over here.
Let's hope it does not have a negative impact on the good work that has been put into reposition Silverfin in the UK with how it operates and try and get more market traction than it had previously managed to do.
I should say as well, Visma, one of the few tech businesses out there with another female CEO in Marek. Kudos to the women in tech who are high flying at the moment. Moving on, iWalker made a fairly recent announcement that they have launched into Shopify. So you can now use iWalker's effectively buy now, pay later features when you have a shop on Shopify, and your customers can spread the cost of their purchase over 3 to 12 months for orders of up to £15,000. And obviously, as an iWalker customer yourself, you get the funds instantly on settlement. So this is a great option for people selling online, the ability to use buy now, pay later, which has been there for quite a long time for B2C payments, but also now there for others as well. So great little feature, I think.
Yeah, sounds good to me. And another, I say little feature, but I think it's quite a big feature. Capitalize have now released a tool called Credit Risk Manager, which has only been released relatively recently and builds on their existing credit report capabilities inside their platform. Credit Risk Manager pulls in ledger details such as invoices from all the small business software and combines this with credit monitoring services provided by their integration and partnership with Experian. And the tool will display that business data such as the credit score, the credit limit, outstanding invoices, and basically creates a risk assessment. And what this does is build upon that tool of identifying where are the customers that you need to be wary of inside your portfolio. So I think it's another good release from Capitalize, building into the integrations we've already got to build actually a much better tool.
Yeah, and we've been having a bit of play with this because we were given early access to this to have a little bit of a look at. It looks like it's a great little tool. I would say in terms of features, there's a little bit of a similarity with some of the stuff that you can do within Citargo because they've obviously had this kind of credit risk monitoring ability when you're looking at a account.
I thought it was Citargo, might be a competitor.
But also it goes a little bit deeper because it allows you to look at a little bit more information. Yeah, great option. And I think this is one of the things where we do see a reasonable amount of traction with our clients is being able to not just look at your debts in terms of how much you're owed by customers, but also to be able to profile them and target the ones that are potentially most at risk.
Yeah, it sounds great. And I think I would like to play with that as well. So I'm going to work out how to do that soon. And then the final bit of news that I've got is probably the most interesting one. That's why I left it to the end. So HMRC are changing how the agent authorization works in that you can no longer copy across from your existing lists that are inside HMRC. You have to add them as a new client completely from scratch. How thrilling is that? If people are still copying across from their old lists, why are you still doing this? You should have finished this ages ago. You should be with new clients now. Everything should be on the portal. Why are you doing that? If you are doing that and you're listening to this, I don't apologize.
I love that. It's funny because I was on a podcast a few weeks ago where we talked about this change and we did discover that we had a handful of clients that we had to move across that had slipped through the gap. So I was just like, oh.
John, you are that person.
Horrifying. But yeah, we'll get there. The one good thing about agent authorization is that it is slowly moving into the 20th century, isn't it?
It's been the most horrific experience, the whole staff management, client management, and even just the ability to work collaboratively on a client with other agents. It's just not possible. It's like they went, okay, we need a system. Let's not think about a plan at all or talk to anyone about the functionality they need.
There is single sign-on now for the new HMRC like agent portal, though.
Did see HMRC had enabled an easy payment system as well from stuff that we've talked about previously as well. I've seen other people talking about it on social media. Maybe people should listen to our podcast more and follow up on the things we talk about.
As I had a conversation with another accountant over in North America this morning, as it happens, we were talking about the Dext updates, and I'm afraid to say she clearly not listened to the latest episode where we talked about the Dextension that's available in Chrome. And whilst we're talking about that, I should also make an apology because I called out our account manager for not updating me. And then I was reminded by one of my colleagues that he's on paternity leave at the moment. So we've probably got a reasonable excuse not to have updated us.
Harsh, John, harsh. But look, the main thing is, if you are listening to this podcast, you're obviously getting some insights that you can use and put you ahead of others in the space. So thank you for listening.
There you go. Thank you very much for listening. It's always a pleasure to get these things out there for everyone. Make sure you give us feedback. Tell us what you do, what you don't like. If it's all about Ryan, you don't like Ryan, that's not a problem. He is ginger. He gets bullied a lot. So that's just what happens. And we'll bring you finger updates from Indy as well when we can.
Yeah. And if you haven't checked it out already, check out our Digital Disruptors webpage that should hopefully, fingers crossed, be live as the release of this podcast. If it's not, then just wait a few days and it should be there. But yeah, we'd love to see what you think and check it out and let us know what you think of the pod and also our new brand launch.
Fingers crossed. I love that. Apart from Indy.
She can't. Physically impossible to cross fingers. And that's signing off Ryan and Paul from the pod.